Hello, welcome. Episode number 7 or 8, I think. I'm going to go with 7. A couple of reasonably long ones. Well, the first one is, second one not so much. So I'm not going to talk too much. I'm just going to read the 2 back to back and then summarise them both at the end. But these could be quite interesting. The psychology behind fat loss on food. And then process goals. And I'm going to be honest, I don't actually remember what I wrote in these chapters. And it's going to be very interesting. You may find me sort of going through it and not agreeing with some of the stuff that I've written, because I may well have changed my mind on something. I really don't know. But what I will do is at the end, give you my feedback on it and tell you whether or not I've changed my goals. Change my thoughts on it. So, here goes then. Chapter 8? Might well be. The psychology behind fat loss and food. Firstly, I feel I need to point out that I am by no means a qualified psychologist. I've studied variations of sports psychology on my different academic courses, which I believe gives me a good basic understanding. Saying that though, show me anywhere where it says you must hold the relevant qualification to offer someone some advice. You only need to look on social media to see the latest celebrity from the recent reality TV show offering you the perfect diet for fat loss, yet they generally have 0 qualifications. They do, however, have the most people listening to them and following them. It really is very uneasy and unsettling, if you like, for qualified health and fitness professionals to watch and see this. Many, far more qualified and experienced than I am, have attempted to tackle the issue, which in all honesty is damaging people's health, and this has fallen on deaf ears. What I will say though, if you struggle with mental health issues or feel like you need help, seriously reach out to a qualified professional or at least confide in someone you trust who will be able to offer good advice and help where it's needed. What I am going to cover in this chapter is aspects I've read myself, experienced or have dealt with firsthand surrounding the mindset of individuals, the decisions they make and the consequences of them. The biggest influencer I've found surrounding the psychology of food choices, and when you think about it, it is a fairly common sense one, is environments and situation. Let's put it simply to start with. At a birthday celebration, you eat some birthday cake. Why? The situation. That's just what you do, right? Is it wrong? No, of course not. Remember, one of the key principles of maintaining a good relationship with food is that no food is bad. To push this on a little, you have a friend, and every time she comes round, you have a packet of sweets, a packet of chocolate biscuits, and a bottle of wine. Sound familiar? We see it most days on social media, particularly a Friday and Saturday evening, with the little whoops emoji. Is it wrong? No. But are you aware of it? Why has that become a thing for you? Is this something you want to change? Is it something you can change? For some, are you even aware you're even doing it? The first part to changing is identifying the problem. But you just said it wasn't wrong. I did. But if this calorie binge every time your friend comes round is taking you over your calorie budget and preventing you from reaching your personal goals, it now becomes an issue we need to resolve. Does that mean eliminating it? No, not necessarily. But it does mean we have to address it. You can either not consume the sweets, biscuits and wine. Reduce the calories of those by controlling the amount you consume. Make changes to the selections. Continue consuming exactly the same, but make restrictions and adjustments elsewhere in your diet at different times during the week or day. Let's say you're going out for a pizza with a group of friends. You don't want to feel uncomfortable in the environmental situation. The last thing you want to do is go into the pizzeria and order the chicken salad while everyone else is ordering pizza. That is only going to bring unwanted attention to yourself, which you don't want. You want to be able to sit there comfortably and enjoy your evening. This doesn't mean you can't attend, but you want to still follow your nutrition plan. You can take enjoyment from food and from spending time with friends in a social environment. But how can we tackle this? What we need to do is reduce your calories, but still be able to consume a pizza. Yes? Point to note, this works for all foods, not just pizza. Have a plan. During the day, reduce your calorie intake. This may sound obvious, but to some will not. What you can then do is reduce the calories of the pizza. Simply opting for a smaller size pizza, a thinner base, and choosing a topping, for example, chicken and vegetables, will save you more calories than you might imagine. Opt to drive as well and have a low calorie soft drink, and you are saving calories on the alcohol that you would have usually consumed also. When it comes to dessert, you make a choice. Do you want one? Yes or no? If yes, pick one. If you pick a higher calorie option, just be aware that you'll need to account for this, and then account to save some more in the day before or after, or make the lower calorie choice, something like frozen yogurt or sorbet. It's usually significantly lower in calories than the big chocolate fudge cake. Come the end of the night, we should feel pretty good about our decision. Not only have we saved up some calories during the day to enjoy our pizza, we've saved some calories during the actual evening by making slightly better choices, but still fitting in with our crowd of friends. Moving a little further into psychology and moving away from the decisions around food. Many people associate themselves as being a particular person. I'll do my best to explain what I mean here by using different examples. If you are a runner, you associate yourself with being a runner. It becomes a part of you that you go out and run, so you run. If you are a bodybuilder, you associate yourself with being a bodybuilder, and others around you associate that with you. So in order to uphold this association, you stay in bodybuilder shape, because if you don't, you lose that association. If you lose that association, people begin to notice. Same as runners. If people associate you with being a runner and you stop running, people recognise and notice this. Let's look at this from a body image perspective. If you've been overweight for a long period of time, you begin to associate yourself with being overweight, and so do others around you. This makes it increasingly hard to move away from. If you begin to change your behaviours and lifestyle, those around you will notice and likely comment. You have to be strong enough to deal with the comments. Some of them may well be directed in a negative way. Most hopefully will not. Even positive comments highlight the fact that you are trying to change something about yourself that those around you have associated with you. This brings me nicely onto another quote, one which I'm not even sure where I heard it. I may have even come up with it myself. You are not fat, you just currently have extra fat. This is a hugely powerful statement, one which again I want you to read twice. You are not fat, you just currently have extra fat. Breaking that statement down and what it actually means. Being fat is not something you are. Having ginger hair is something I am. I cannot change that. I guess I could diet, but fundamentally, I will always have ginger hair. Having extra body fat is entirely different. It's not a part of you. It's something you can get rid of. Something I know you will get rid of by following the principles in this book. Being overweight is not something you have to permanently associate with yourself. Associate yourself with. It's something you can change. Those around you may associate you with being overweight, which is where it becomes difficult to separate yourself from that vision and perception others have of you. Be strong, be different, make the changes you need to remove that association. Even if those above paragraphs don't resonate at all with you, they may well be something you can help someone else with. Use them as motivation to help you make life-changing decisions, if nothing else. I'm just going to go straight into the next chapter. I'm going to be honest, not a lot has really changed that. Probably some of the wording I could have been a bit more subtle with, perhaps. But yeah, I still agree with all of that. Process goals. The one biggest mistake that is often seen in this journey to improve body composition is all too often looking at the end goal and it being too far out of reach. This does not mean don't set big goals. I encourage that. In fact, I think your goals should be big. So big that they scare you and put the seed in your mind that you are going to have to work pretty damn hard to achieve them. But that should not be the focus. The focus should be on the small daily steps. I want you to read that last step sentence. The focus should be on the small daily steps. The process goals is what we will refer to them as. They all contribute to an improved lifestyle and behaviour choices, which ultimately will lead to achieving your outcome-based goal. Lifestyle and behaviour change is what we're after, not just an end result. For example, the goal may be to lose 20 kilograms of body weight. Quite a sizable goal, I'm sure you will agree. If this is your thought every day, 20 kilograms, that loss of 0.5 kilograms a week is going to feel like a long way off each and every day. It will not feel like much of an achievement week to week. You'll feel like you are not getting anywhere. You'll feel demotivated. It will not be encouraging you in your day-to-day activity as you don't appear to be moving forward. Turn that around, that 0.5 kilos that you are losing every week by the end of the year is 26 kilos. Not so bad now, is it? I'd like to think if I offered you a 26 kilogram weight drop in a year, you would 100% take it. This is not what I want you to do though. In order to achieve your goal, we will stick with the 20 kilo weight loss. You know you will need to make changes to your life today in order to achieve that. You can't carry on doing what you're doing now and expect that result. Fair point. So by having process goals, we're identifying the changes you can make today in order to achieve the end goal. These are the goals and changes we are going to track and monitor. Another of my favourite quotes is what gets measured gets managed. Measuring and managing our progression daily is going to yield big results further down the line. Tell me what you did today and I will tell you where you will be in a year. We need to change our thinking. We have set our end goal, we have put a deadline on it, and we have broken it down into shorter steps, using the example above. I want to lose 20 kilograms in 40 weeks. Results in 0.5 kilograms a week. How can we process the steps to achieve this? Here are just a few ideas. Knowing what you know, by the time you have finished this book, you'll have a full understanding of fat loss and what you need to do. So working out a process goals becomes easier. Achieving them, not easy, but absolutely doable. Our process goals could be something along the lines of this. Move 10,000 steps daily, 3 structured exercise sessions a week, hit my calorie targets daily, eat 5 portions of vegetables a day. All these will stack up and compound over time. You'll make a very powerful change in your daily routines. Why is this important? Small goals, because you can tick them off as you go. There is nothing more motivating than ticking goals off daily. It keeps you accountable, and success breeds success. You will be moving forward and you will have physical and visual representations of this as confirmation. Another huge benefit of these small daily steps is that you can see where improvement is needed. If you regularly find yourself not ticking off the daily steps, you have identified an issue. You can now put actions in place to ensure you now begin to hit this target. Potential action steps could be, in my lunch hour, I'm going to go for a 20-minute walk. I walk the dogs for an extra 10 minutes in the evening. I will get off a station early and walk the last part of my journey to walk to work or home. These are simple changes, but ones which people are reluctant to do if they haven't got a way of measuring and managing their daily activities because they are failing to see the significance of them. The important point to note here is remembering why you are doing it. The small daily changes contribute to additional steps. The additional steps contribute to you ticking off another goal. The ticking off of another goal contributes to you achieving your outcome-based goal. Achieving your outcome-based goal contributes to you changing your life. It's quite funny, actually. So that's the end of both chapters. I put a post out last week, which, funnily enough, was almost identical to that chapter, but summed up in about 9 words or something. If you walk an extra 400 metres a day, just 400 metres, that's once around an athletics track, you end up walking over 90 miles in a year. Think of the difference a 90-mile walk would make in terms of activity, making you feel good, calories burnt, and all the rest of it. So that, again, is 100% right. Focus on process goals. Focus on the little things, tick them off every day, and they will add up over the course of a set amount of time or a year. Right, I'm going to hold it there. Next chapters are the good food, bad food debate, and then creating your own nutritional plan, which is a long, long chapter. I might even have to break it up into 2 separate ones by the looks of it. Right, I'll leave it there. Whatever you're doing, enjoy it, have a good day, hit your process goals, and make some life-changing decisions. See you on the next one.